10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We had Titans OTAs last week. We'll also have practice coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. Joining us now to break it all down is TD Teron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. TD, I do want to get into what you've seen in the practice field, what you heard from some players and the coaches. But first, the news of the day, the breaking news this morning, Justin Jefferson signs the massive four-year, $140 million extension. And look, I think that's fair. That's totally fair, and he deserves every single cent of it. But what does that mean for the Titans in terms of the wide receiver market? Are the Titans going to feel that if they do, in fact, decide to extend DeAndre Hopkins, whether it's now or after this upcoming season?
No, I think the two things are really related, honestly. Justin Jefferson is a player that's just entering his prime, and DeAndre Hopkins is a player who has seen his prime, but is still a high-caliber wide receiver. So it's totally different situations. I don't think they're related at all. And if the Titans decide to extend DeAndre Hopkins, it'll just be based off of what they perceive his value to be and what he feels his value being and that coming to a match.
And what do you make of the wide receiver market? We were just talking about how just a few years ago when A.J. Brown was talking contract negotiations, he was asking the ballpark of about 20, 22, 24. And I thought 20, 22, 24 was massive. Now, fast forward just a couple of years, $35 million for Justin Jefferson. The wide receiver market has absolutely ballooned. What do you make of that? And does it slow down anytime soon? Is there going to be a shift anytime soon?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone up $10 million per since A.J. Brown signed his deal in what, 2021? So, I mean, it's just one of those things where things, or 2022 rather, it's inflation, right? And I think you look at the way it works, Justin Jefferson's deal is now the floor for CeeDee Lamb and Ja'Marr Chase. And then it's going to be the floor, theirs will be the floor for the next guy to come along, you know, whether that's Brandon Ayuk or whoever it should be. So it's just the way things work. The interesting part of all of it is, and I said this on the TD Power Hour, you know, with Stillman and Company on Friday, the thing that's interesting to me is, does it at some point become kind of like the running back situation where you draft a guy, he comes in, he makes immediate impact, you ride it out for that rookie deal, and then you draft another one. And I think when you look at the way the receiver position is being approached, I mean, you got 10, 11-year-olds knowing how to run the full route tree and knowing how to convert the routes against different coverage and things like that. So it's starting so much earlier with these 7-on-7 camps and just the tournaments and everything. So receivers are coming into the league much more ready to play and have that impact. And I wonder if that's going to kind of curb the way things are going for these receivers that are established getting money.
Yeah, well, hopefully it doesn't happen, but the money is getting so large, TD. The owners may look at it, like you said, like the running back position where, you know, the NFL is geared toward throwing the football and scoring points. So, you know, we can use you up for 3-4 years, maybe 5 years, and then draft another one and use that person up for 3 to 4, 5 years and then keep that cycle going. That's the only way they can control sort of the monies that are being paid to wide receivers moving forward. But even that, I mean, they're still going to get – top guys are going to get top money. It's the other guys underneath that that will be affected.
No doubt. And I think that's the way you've seen the running back position go, right? Derrick Henry got his money. Mm-hmm. You know, other players – they've gotten their money, and I think that's the way it's going to go. Nick Chubb, right? He got his money. Jonathan Taylor got his money. So there were others, you know, who did, Austin Eckler, et cetera. So, yeah, you're right. I can see it going that way.
Now, TD, we had a conversation earlier about the Titans and what to expect. There was this article put out about the rankings based on analytics and everything else. And it ranked the Titans, as you probably know, toward the end, you know, the bottom half of this league as far as win total and what they expect from them. What do you expect from this team? Because my thing is, the players they went out and got doesn't look to me as if they are saying, okay, this is just going to be a season where if we get 8-9 wins, that'd be great, but we are building something for the long run. I look at it as, no, they want to be in contention to make the playoffs at the end of the season with the guys that they brought in.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's the goal. And, I mean, you know, the work that goes into just enduring a full season is enough work to not settle for being mediocre, right? And just the level of competitor, just from player to person in the building, everybody is not going to settle for just being average. The goal is to make the playoffs and win it all. And I think if you're not thinking that's your goal and not setting that as what you want to go out and do, I think you probably need to find a new profession or you're in the wrong field. So, yeah, 100%. They're looking to win it all, and, I mean, that should be the goal, absolutely.
Now, what other areas of this team do you think, moving forward, do you think need to be upgraded? Now, we know what they've done with the offensive line and wide receiver position. They solidified the corner position. Is it the safety position and the inside backer position? Do they need to add depth somewhere else?
You know, the inside backer position is an area where I think they're good. I think you keep Jack Gibbons. You don't release him. I think you have he and Cedric Gray compete for that starting job. And don't forget about Otis Reese. You know, this is a guy who came in late, and he has some pretty solid games, you know. So he's someone else in the mix, and we already know that Kenneth Murray is going to be used in a certain way there. So I think they're good at inside backer. I'm really intrigued by the outside linebacker, the edge position, so to speak, because I want to see the progression that Caleb Murphy has made. You know, I was watching him, and he looks, you know, like he got some pop. You know, and again, this is just on the sled and watching him through practice, but he looks like he's somebody that could help out. And then Rashad Weaver has kind of slimmed down and just got like a more streamlined physique, so I want to see what he does. But I could see them adding, you know, whether it's, you know, bringing in a Shane Ray, who, you know, was there for rookie minicamp, or signing a guy like a Carl Lawson or something like that. I could see them doing that. I think, you know, at this point, there really aren't any moves that they could make that would make you say, okay, you know what, that pushed them over the edge. They're going to win the AFC South now. I don't think that's the case, but you could always add depth. And I say it over and over again about that safety position. Watch out for 39, Matthew Jackson. He's a guy I think that could come in and help out, especially when they go like big nickel-type situations.
All right, Teron, you got to give us a quick rundown of what it was like in New York to see Daryl Strawberry's number 18 retired.
Oh, man, it was beautiful, man. Got to get out there. I had basically front row seats in right field, so, you know, it was – right at his old stopping ground, so to speak. But it was great, man. Eric Davis was there, you know, so that was cool. A guy who wasn't a Met that I really liked. Just seeing all the old-timers there was great. I mean, the game itself, you know, was what it was. At least Mark Vientos was a guy, you know. He's one of the baby Mets, Willie, that I've, you know, really been high on throughout the process.
Yep, you have.
Seeing him hit a home run. But, yeah, it was just really cool, just kind of – being there, it always I text my lady and told her, like, I always feel like a little kid because this brings back, you know, memories, good memories when I was a kid, you know, getting off the train and going to the stadium and being in the parking lot and all that. So it was awesome.
We have to cling to nostalgia these days after the sixth loss after leading after eight innings in the last month yesterday. Times are tough.
Yeah, really hard on the boulevard, man.
It's hard on the boulevard. Teron, I want to get back to Seth Walder's stuff here because it really got us going in a conversation. I don't think you're going to see a ton of predictions nationally where the Titans are much higher than where Walder has them, right? They're all different ways of coming up with it. So how would you couch that if you're Callahan, if you're Carthon, in a sort of, here's the outlook, would you embrace the underdog role a little bit knowing that that's what's coming? Do you think that's the way to go, or should you continue to try to convince people that you're better than this?
I don't think you try to convince anybody, right? I think it's just a matter of just being focused on your own goal and having those blinders on. I don't think, you know, as an athlete, you should really concern yourselves with these lists and things that come out, because it's just that. It's entertainment, right? And it's June, so you're going to see all those types of things. And I wouldn't be concerned about it. I would just focus on putting the work in and just going ahead and proving myself right, and proving that the work that I put in was worth the result that we're producing on the field. That's how I would look at it.
With the money that they spent, I know this is going to be a big theme of the season coming up, is the money they have spent in free agency to try to plug a lot of holes, and it looks good. As you look at the roster the next 2 or 3 years, what would be your concern level of, okay, let's say you have another year, maybe you even keep DeAndre Hopkins around for another year past this one, or Ridley works for a couple years. But as you get close to the new stadium opening, how tough will it be to replace these players eventually with younger foundational players? Because that's the tough needle to thread, I would say, is these guys will hopefully give you a good security blanket to help develop Will Levis, but there has to be something coming in behind some of these veterans who probably realistically are only going to give you between 1 and 3 years of production.
Yeah, there is, and the beauty of that is the draft, right? And you look at some of these teams where they'll draft a position, you'd be like, man, they didn't need that. Why did they draft that, right? And here it is. It's because they drafted that position to be prepared for a guy who's eventually going to be filtered out, whether it's because of performance level or because of cost. So I think the best way that they could do that is draft wisely. They need these draft picks to hit, and I'm talking about, like, from top to bottom. You know, you use 7 draft picks, you need at least 4 of those guys to hit and eventually be contributors, and that's the best way to be able to just kind of keep loading that wagon and keep things moving.
Now, TD, what did you see last week in OTAs in regards to the offense? I know that's going to be the running story, how fast this offense can gel, you know, with the new players, new head coach implementing this new scheme. What did you see last week, and what do you expect to see the next couple of days?
Yeah, I thought last week it was pretty good. It was a 3rd and short session that we got to see, and I thought that the offense was – their completion rate was pretty high. You know, Will Levis did take a shot or two down the field, but for the most part, he was hitting the short passing stuff. I like the combo routes and things that I'm seeing, and you could kind of tell – the concept of what Brian Callahan and that offense is looking to do, you know, in short yardage. So that was good. I really liked the enjoyment. And it's funny, actually, I was sitting in bed this morning when I first woke up and just thinking of ways, you know, that they'll use Spears and Pollard together. And I drew up a couple of things myself. But it's just because, like, I was pretty excited seeing what Callahan was doing with those guys. So, you know, those are all some things to be excited about. I think this offense is definitely going to be more modern, and it's going to be something that, you know, people in the game of Madden, they might pick the Titans playbook a little more often now.
Talking with TD, Teron Davenport. And speaking of that, of Spears and Pollard, and we've talked a lot about the receivers, you know, rightfully so, in the offensive line. I'm at least guilty of not talking about the running back position enough, because this run game is going to look significantly different. Not only do you not have Derrick Henry, that's a massive factor in it. It's also a new offense, new philosophy, new play callers. But how do you expect this playing out with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears? Is there one going to be kind of more of the bell cow back? Is it going to be split pretty close to 50-50? Is Tajay Spears going to be your pass catcher? Like, how do you expect this, or predict this, to kind of play out between these two running backs?
Hey, I think it's going to be balanced, honestly. Yeah. And, you know, I wonder, the going with the hot hand part of it, I wonder how that's going to play into factor, because, you know, sometimes it'll just be a guy's day, and you got to feed him when it's his day. So I'm curious how it's going to work out, but I think just outside looking in, I think it's going to be a more, you know, shared load and a distribution of labor, so to speak. And it's funny because Brian Callahan had kind of referred to that when I asked him about the running backs, you know, being devalued in the game of football itself. I asked him that at the combine, and he touched on the distribution of labor side of it. So I think it's going to be split.
Talking with TD, and one of many reasons why I'm bummed that we can't be out there at OTAs, of course, it's right in the middle of our show, is because I want to see Bill Callahan. I want to see how he interacts with the players. I want to see his process. I want to see, you know, Olga and Bertha, how he's working with the offensive line, and, of course, how he's working with J.C. Latham. But what have you taken away from Bill Callahan and his process, what you can tell us so far?
Yeah, so much detail in coaching. And it's not the type of coaching where it's like, you know, screaming on them or any of that. It is literal teaching. And when I say detail, I'm talking about all the way down to making sure that J.C. Latham's forehead is against Olga or Bertha, against the sled, you know, to start it out correctly, to make sure that his positioning is right. I mean, it's amazing, the detail. And I watched with Trevor Maddich, and, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again. You could tell how much he appreciated and loved it, because he was watching those guys do the drills the same way I watch Kerry Champion when she's on TV. So I know that there was a lot of appreciation and love for what he was seeing, you know. And it's that's the way it is, man. And just the progression, and then the positive reinforcement, you know, how excited he gets when they get it right. It's fun to watch.
To be able to watch one of the greatest offensive line coaches in the league, if not the best offensive line coach in the league, to be able to watch that with Trevor Maddich, who has such a wealth of information at the offensive line position.
Yeah.
A couple of things that we've heard over the last couple of weeks from players that made us all raise our eyebrows a little bit. A couple of weeks ago, Will Levis said, you know, we feel like we just have a more sense of ownership. And Chigakonkwo said, look, we feel like we're playing more free. We've always been free in the locker room, but we feel a lot more free on the field. Several things that some players have alluded to of just the different vibe and the different feel from the last regime to this regime. Do you feel that? And what do you take away from players kind of alluding to how different things might feel in the building?
Yeah, I can't say I feel that because we haven't been out for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. This week would be a good opportunity to kind of get a little more of a gauge because it's back-to-back-to-back days, you know, so I'm looking forward to that. What I think of it is just basically it's the result of two different coaching styles, right? And it's not to say one is better than the other, because I feel like we get too caught up in oh, well, Mike Vrabel wasn't a good coach. He was a darn good coach, and he had some really good coaches as well. And this organization, they achieved a high level of success through him. So it's not to say one was wrong and one was right. I think just for what these guys needed in this situation, I think it's perfect for them just to have this type of start. And anytime, it's just like a new relationship, right? You get into a new relationship, everything is, hey, it's golden. And, you know, it's, you know, there's beautiful music playing all the time and all that type of stuff. And then as you get into it, the realness sinks in. So I think, you know, they're in that period right now, that honeymoon phase, and, you know, hopefully for their sake, it's a good marriage, right? And things continue to work out and be on the high note that it's on.
It's the classic case of everything that my ex did was horrible and everything that my new significant other does is amazing and awesome and can do no wrong. TD, Teron Davenport, always appreciate your time and your insight. Before we let you go, TD, please tell us about ESPN Bet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the huge moments this summer. It's the exclusive sportsbook of ESPN, and it has it all. That includes offers and promotions from Scott Van Pelt and Stephen A. Smith. From the playoff intensities to getting on the links and out to the ballpark, there's no better time to be a sports fan than right now. As a new user, you get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet, so download ESPN Bet today. What a play. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call or text the TN Red Line at 800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for details.
Thanks, TD. You're the best. We'll catch up next
week.
All right,
appreciate it. Yep.
I appreciate it. TD, Teron Davenport, brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook. We gave away some Music City Grand Prix tickets at the beginning of the show. But so many people called in. So many people wanted him. Only one person could get the pair of tickets. Let's give away even more.
Hmm.
Pick a number, D-Mace.
Nick, look at me like, please, please don't pick.
Just don't
please
say don't, 80. Don't
just
pick
don't 80. Say 100.
Nothing over six, all right? Okay. Nothing over six.
Caller number three.
Be caller number three right now, 615-737-1025, to win a pair of three-day tickets to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix at Nashville Super Speedway, September 13th through September 15th. You can also purchase your tickets right now for the Music City Grand Prix at the Nashville Super Speedway on Friday, September 13th through the 15th at musiccitygp.com. As the race and station, 1025 The Game has a special offer that's for a limited time. Use promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a 20% discount right now through June 16th.
Lift it to right. That's going to drop for a base hit, and High Point has done it. They have walked off Vanderbilt and win it 10-9, and the celebration is on.
Willie. Man, not a great weekend for Vanderbilt in the Clemson Regional over the weekend.
Tough.
They got just clapped against Coastal Carolina. 13-3.
And the Mets lost Saturday and Sunday as well. Yeah.
I appreciated all of the low point jokes on Twitter, though.
Willie.
About the Mets or Vanderbilt?
Both.
I mean, that's a very fair question that you asked for clarification.
Both worlds. I'm in both worlds.
High point, low point.
So what do you do now?
Lindsay Rally, too, to her credit, has not rubbed it in on me. She is a High Point Panther. Played volleyball there back in the
High
day.
High Point Panthers.
Yeah, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the first time I think they've even been to the NCAA tournament.
Has it? And they beat Vandy? Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay,
walked him off.
They walked him off.
Yeah.
It was a crazy game, too. Vanderbilt got up 5-0, then trailed 9-5.
They made a comeback.
Made a comeback, tied it up, and then lost in the bottom of the ninth.
High Point. I'm just thinking of the name. When I saw that High Point, I'm like, who in the hell is High Point? Mm-hmm. When I first saw it, I'm like, who in the hell is High Point?
It's just like any NCAA tournament when you're like, wait, is that a real school?
Exactly. I'm like,
I remember when one of the most fun games I ever got to broadcast was Belmont's win at Missouri, Belmont's first or second year of being Division I. And I swear to God, if the crowd was 16,000 and it was packed and Missouri was in the top 25 and Rick Byrd's Belmont team beat them and I got to call it, it was an awesome. I guarantee you about 90% of the people in that crowd would not have been able to tell you that Belmont's in Nashville. Like they're like, oh, yeah, well, I'll go to the game. You know, we'll see our team get a win.
Yeah.
And Belmont just shocked them. They were like, who are these guys? What's Belmont? It's the same thing with, like, who's High Point? Where's High Point?
Where is High Point?
So that's tough.
Oral Roberts.
Yeah.
But it was very tough just to watch them recover the way they did to get to the tournament, earn a 2 seed with a really good performance in the SEC tournament, and then have everything go wrong. Like, J.D. Thompson was probably the savior of the season with his wins over Tennessee and Kentucky on consecutive Sundays. He gets the ball in game one against Coastal Carolina, and he deserved to get it, and he just didn't have it. He did not have his sharp stuff. He hit a couple of guys. He hung a couple pitches with 2 strikes. He couldn't get out of an inning in the second inning. 2 outs, 2 or 3 straight hits. It just everything unraveled. Plus, on top of that, they lost their shortstop and leadoff hitter, Jonathan Vastine. He got sick. Mm-hmm. He almost didn't make it to the plate in the bottom of the first. They had to delay the game. Mm-hmm. Then he got sick on the field, which I'm glad they didn't show on TV. That would have been really rough. But then he couldn't play the next day, so he was done. I mean, that's tough to lose him. Like he's a key guy. Then Davis Diaz in the first game fouled 2 consecutive pitches off his knee, was able to sort of gut it out, but he wasn't the same player after that. They lost their catcher, Alan Espinal, in the top of the first in the second game. He's their cleanup hitter, tremendous defensive catcher, one of the bright spots of the season. Having said all that, right, it was clear that this Vanderbilt team, with some of the injuries they had during the season and just their overall what they had, is down a notch from the championship level that we've almost taken for granted for all these years. And that's what I kind of – try to be fair about is I know everybody's hurting. I know the basketball team's been bad. The football team's struggled, right? And you're clinging to the baseball team, like, give us the joy, right, if you're a Vanderbilt fan. And now they've had a couple of off years,
yeah,
right, especially this year. This was tough because they got blown out a bunch of times when you're just not used to seeing that. So they're down a notch. But don't take for granted all of the years, right? It's just hard to be that good every single year. And I'm hoping that it will cycle back up.
And that's what I was going to ask you. With the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, and I think, Caroline, you mentioned this earlier at the beginning of the show, before we even really got into talking about Vanderbilt, with the addition of those two teams and other teams, how does the future look for Vandy moving forward? Because it seems like, you know, unless, you know, Coach starts to truly, you know, accept and embrace the NIL, they're going to keep on falling behind. Not to say that they're, you know, they're not going to have good seasons, but we're used to Vandy being one of the top teams.
That's the standard now, that Tim Corbin has set.
Exactly. And now they're going to, it seems like they're going to be slipping further and further behind some of these teams that are now coming in to the SEC.
Yeah, it's a fair question, because I think what's shaping up is just looking at baseball with the way that college athletic is going, I think the best players, especially with no Pac-12 baseball, all the best players in California, whereas maybe a high percentage of them would have stayed and played for UCLA or for USC or Arizona State, they're going to come to the SEC because that's where money is. That's where the biggest crowds are now.
That's where the best teams are.
The best teams are. You know, maybe the Big 12 will get some. The ACC will get some. But it's only going to get stronger. Mm-hmm. And now that Texas and Oklahoma are coming in to the league. And those are big money programs. Vanderbilt beat Texas earlier this season. So it's not like they've cratered or anything like that. It's just getting back up to that championship level is probably a bigger challenge than it's ever been. What I'm seeing, and I haven't talked to Tim Corbin in depth about this, but we've talked about this a lot. What does Tim Corbin really value? He loves taking the high school recruits that he's gone all across the country to find, the best of the best, and shaping them for 3-4 years under his watch, developing them. Number one, that's harder to do. Because if you're not playing in one place after a year or two, you're much more inclined to hop over to another team that's offering you some money or maybe has a better opening at your position.
Yeah.
Right? So you have that going on. Number two, you have just the money in general that I still think Vanderbilt is coming along, but probably behind. It's not as easy for them for that. The other thing I'm seeing with some of his recruits, right, let's take Davis Diaz, right, who is a very talented player. He was a high, high recruit, and he has stayed the 2 or 3 years. He hasn't turned into a frontline stud 350 hitter that just anchors the middle of your lineup. So I think they're into that a little bit too. They've got some older players that have stayed and have developed. They just haven't developed into a Brian Reynolds or a Mike Yastrzemski, or a Tony Kemp, J.J. Blade, Austin Martin, the kind of guys that just dominate SEC hitters. It wasn't a dominating lineup, right? And so sometimes that's just what happens. When they have had little down cycles, I think that's part of it. The position players that have stayed loyally haven't turned into stars like some of them have, even though they were all really high recruits. And the same is true for the pitchers. Carter Holton, the last 2 years has been sort of derailed by injuries. Powerful lefty. He was on the mound for the walk-off that we just, but he was relegated to pitching in relief because he hadn't pitched in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep.
He just had arm problems. So when he was a freshman, I thought he might be the next Rocker, Gray, go down the line, Lighter. You know, he looked like that type of talent, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. He hasn't developed into that. So there's a little bit of bad luck coupled with the fact that in this day and age, college teams are older. They've got money backing them. The transfer portal allows a team like Coastal Carolina to have if you look at their roster, it's a hodgepodge of guys that have been there for 1 year or 2 years. They've transferred from junior college. They've come over from a Division III program. They've transferred down from a major Division I program. Mm-hmm. But that's it's a, like everybody's a free agent every year. So Tim Corbin's formula out of his control has changed a little bit. And that is the tough challenge that I think they're facing going forward. And it's not there's no easy answer, right? But I think I know Tim Corbin well enough that what he is cherishing, the development of young men, I've got them from age. I know for a fact, you know, he goes to these guys' weddings, he and his wife Maggie, right? Yeah. He loves the fact that he's got all of these families that he can say he had an imprint on their lives for 3 or 4 years. Right. And it's just harder to build that. It's harder to sustain that now because so many people get pulled in different directions. And they're like, well, you don't like it at Vanderbilt. Oh, the South Carolina needs a first baseman. It's just becoming routine that happens. Right. Oh, you're the backup first baseman. Oh, we've got an opening over at first. It's like that is the give and take of the opportunities for the athletes now. Right, and that makes it really tough on the coach. The stresses, and this is not just for Vanderbilt baseball. This is for all college coaches, right? Where, and we've talked about this.
Yeah,
Rick Neuheisel had a great interview with us. His son is a coach, right? He talked about the constant, everyday thing: are my players that I have staying? Am I going to wake up this morning and get a message that one of my players is hitting the portal or isn't happy? And what about all the other players that are in the portal? That do I want this guy? Do I like that guy? Where does he fit? You can't just kind of sit back and take a breath and say, boy, I really like my team. They're all coming back next year. I'm working on the recruits for next year. It's just there's so many layers on top of it now with all that stuff.
A lot of which are, to a certain extent, out of your control. You mm-hmm. can try and give a player the best pitch that you can to come back for the next season. You can muster up as much NIL as you can and make it as attractive of an offer as possible. But sometimes 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, they're going to make rash decisions. And they mm-hmm. might decide to leave. Now, I do not think that Vanderbilt should move on from Tim Corbin. I know that's been a sentiment that's been thrown out there on social media. I see it in the text line.
Are we even serious about that? I'm not putting any stock into that. There is absolutely zero sentiment from anybody that I know I value their opinion. Thinks they should move on.
All I'm saying is I've seen the idea on Twitter and I see it in
okay,
our text line.
But let's put that in perspective.
I disagree with you.
An idea on Twitter that says, you know, let's drive backwards down I-40 and see how far we get. Like there's no credibility to that.
I'm just saying that is the feeling that I have seen in the conversation that is happening. Whether you want to buy into that or believe in that or value that, it is the conversation that's happening. And I'm saying that I disagree with that because I think that that would be silly and I think that that would be rash. But it is clear to me that something has to change. Whether it's on the coaching staff, whether it's the process. And if Tim Corbin is embracing NIL and transfer portal and acknowledges the formula that I used to use is not working anymore, so I have to modify my formula, then absolutely, you give him the opportunity to do that. But I think that Vanderbilt's in a really tough position where I do believe that the athletic department is bought into NIL and they are trying to do what it takes to keep up with the Joneses. But Vanderbilt is at an inherent disadvantage in terms of the NIL space and transfers. We've talked about how difficult it is with the academic standards and the transfer credits
I don't think
and things
it's
like
easy.
That.
I don't think it's as easy at Vanderbilt to take a transfer. I don't know what it's like at Duke or Northwestern or other
Wake Forest.
Wake Forest.
Another team that's no longer
playing
anymore.
I do know that at Vanderbilt, they're working on this, right, because they know the situation. If you're choosing to play in the SEC, you have to try to adapt. But the school is sitting there going, I can't just take any transfer that wants to come, right? It's a little easier to transfer out of Vanderbilt than it is to transfer into Vanderbilt, especially depending on how many years you've been in college. So I think that's another challenge that they're trying to meet. And this is all sports, right? This isn't just baseball.
And also the fact that in baseball specifically, keeping up with the Joneses has never been as difficult because the league has never been as competitive as it is right now. 10 years ago, Nobody thought about Tennessee baseball. Tennessee baseball is the best team in the country. Kentucky baseball, even just a couple of years ago, I never even thought about Kentucky baseball. They're a national championship contender. It's not just the Floridas and the LSUs and the Vanderbilts anymore. It is the entire league. That the league places so much value on baseball and being incredibly competitive in baseball. And to be incredibly competitive in this league, you have to be a top 10 team in the country. It is not easy, and it is not an easy process. So just kind of where are you at? Because you said you haven't heard any sentiment like that from people that you trust. And I get
no,
it. I understand.
There is 100% backing of Tim Corbin. I think the sentiment for me is, and this is when I talk to a lot of former players and people that I know follow very, very closely, I think I feel like Tim Corbin, does he want to continue to try long term to flourish in this new world? And I haven't asked him that question. Mm-hmm. I worry, though, that he could at some point just say, you know what, this is not what I signed up for. This is crazy. This is not. If he found something else that gave him the joy in it, maybe a different field, I would wonder about that. Just because I know what he has said for years and years on the air, what he talks to campers about, you know, at his baseball camp, which has had such a influence on so many kids' lives, he's a lot more than am I winning on the baseball field, right? It's not, he's not a GM of let me wheel and deal with the salary with the NIL, and this guy's going to go to this JUCO, I'm bringing in another second baseman over here. That's not what something he cherishes. He cherishes building the program, which is exceedingly tough in today's college world. So it's not at all, there's not one iota for me of can Tim Corbin win in this. He can, but it's just
he has.
Yeah, but I'm talking about going forward.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He's going to have to adapt. He is going to have to probably find ways to get transfers. He's going to have to make tougher decisions. I think there are some coaches that do not mind telling a player after 2 years, "Hey, you're not playing here. You're probably better off transferring." Yeah. You know, he buys in and backs players. He supports players that are willing to sit for a couple years behind an older player and then wait 2 years to be a starter. You know, there are guys, plenty of guys in the lineup to do that. But there are some coaches that are impatient and say, you know what, I got a guy over here that wants to transfer in. I can put him right in.
Yeah.
You know, these are all very, very difficult things, I think, that have changed in a hurry, mm-hmm. right, in the last 2 or 3 years especially. So I don't know. Would I have any thought of, oh, maybe another person could do it better? Not one second. Not for one second. So that's why I say don't take for granted. So anybody that's throwing that idea, it's time to move on or anything like that, that's absolutely nuts. Tim Corbin would be my guy for the next however long he wants to coach. I would never, ever doubt that. Even if they slipped another level, I believe in what he's doing.
Hey,
that
if he slipped another level, then we may
have
to have
You're a lot more loyal than I might be.
Yeah, we may have to have some
17 straight years of making the tournament. My teams, I played there. Now 64 teams. We had some pretty good teams that might have been on the bubble if there were 64 and not 48. But Vanderbilt didn't make the NCAA tournament from 1980 until 2004, until he got there. They've made it 17 straight years. So he's got a lot of slack in the rope to me before he's anything close to being on the hot seat. I'm giving him plenty of time. And I like the way he does it. Mm-hmm. That means something to me. I don't like bringing in 50 guys and having tryouts in the fall, and that's just, it's becoming normal, right?
Well, the way you used to do
it, I like the way they're doing
it. The way you got to do it moving forward. He's done it the way he felt was the right way, and it has produced a lot of wins. But over the last two, three seasons, maybe you need to change that. You know, maybe you need to change the way you approach it. I don't know. He's a hell of a coach, and we all know that. But even great coaches have to find a way to adapt to what's going on. And if you don't find a way to adapt, you know, because again, Vandy fans, they're going to get tired of just because he set a standard. Corbin set a standard. If this continues, where, you know, especially if they're second fiddle to UT continually, then you add these other teams. If he continues to be like not one of those top teams, the fan base is going to get a little restless. Now, I'm not saying they're going to ask for him to be fired, but just like anything else, once you're not winning, we all know they forget about that the winning a long time ago. If you're not winning now, then you got to answer the bell. You got to answer some questions here.
Especially when your arch rival just down
the street. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, yes.
Historically has not been a very competitive baseball program, mm-hmm. is now the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
That stings a little bit worse. Obviously, it's going to stink whenever your team falls short of expectations. The expectations that Tim Corbin has set are very high. But that makes it even worse. I do want to get into your thoughts on this coming up next. But first, we got more tickets to give away. I'm feeling in a good mood. We're feeling in a good mood. It's a sunny Monday, so let's give away some tickets to the Music City Grand Prix. Willie, pick a number.
Let's say 17.
Okay, maybe 7. Be caller 7.
Why?
Right now,
615. You said pick a number. You didn't say between 1 and 10.
I thought you knew what I was doing here.
We're going to be here till 4 o'clock.
Well, I'm surprised Willie didn't say 45.
I do have to. Plaz, one year, he said like 49 or something. Our producer almost went nuts. Caller number 49. It did not go over well with our producer.
Nick to be sweating back there.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's do 7. Yeah. The caller 7.
Okay, let's go 7.
615-737-1025. Caller 7 will win a pair of 3-day tickets to the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix at Nashville Super Speedway September 13th through 15th. You can also purchase your tickets right now for the Music City Grand Prix at Nashville Super Speedway. Again, that's September 13th through 15th at musiccitygp.com. As the race and station, 1025 The Game has a special offer for a limited time. Use the promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a 20% discount now through June 16th. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I have to get to this text that I know Willie is going to hate. Matthew at Nashville texts in and says, is Tim Corbin coaching for his job next season?
No.
No?
No. No.
I can't say no, definitively. Do I think that Tim Corbin should be fired? Absolutely not. No, I do not, because I think that Tim Corbin is one of the best coaches in all of college baseball. You never know what can happen. But
you're saying somebody at Vanderbilt would fire him next year for something?
I'm saying I don't know what can happen.
There's zero chance
Vanderbilt,
that
I don't think it happens. Based on it being Vanderbilt.
You're talking about next year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
is he coach? I'm not going to say never.
They've given coach
not a lot of slack.
Every coach a lot of slack in over there at that university. So if Corbin has another bad year, well, not the year we expect of a Vanderbilt baseball team, they're not going to fire him. They're not going to be thinking about firing him.
No.
I think Jim Corbin is a fantastic coach, but it is adapt or die.
Vanderbilt will.
Now, that's a different question.
They will hold
on. Does he
on.
Need to adapt? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're already you don't have any choice. They are adapting. But that's very different. Is he coaching for his job next year? There is zero chance that he gets fired. I don't care if they dip. There's no way. There's zero chance.
Unless they don't win a game at all next year.
And that's why I'm never going to
say
never
to anything. They could go 10-40 next year. He will not get fired.
It's Vandy. They're not firing him.
No.
They're not.
Zero.
That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.
Be love and love of your people. Happy Monday and peace.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.